UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Every year, thousands of Americans experience a spinal cord injury. These injuries can be devastating and cause physical and emotional distress. According to the National Spinal Cord Injury Statistics Center at UAB, there are approximately 17,000 new cases of spinal cord injury each year. My guest today is Dr. Amy McLean. She's the chair and professor in physical medicine and rehabilitation and the medical director of the UAB Spinal Cord Injury Model System. Welcome to the show, Dr. McLean. So explain a little bit about spinal cord injury and some of the most common causes that you see.
Well, a spinal cord in itself is part of the central nervous system, and it's the major connection through which motor and sensory information of our body travels between the body and the brain. So when you get a spinal cord injury, then you're going to disrupt that connection, and that means that the information can't get to the brain. When that happens, you can, and it can happen at various degrees of injury. The injury in the spinal cord will not allow people to feel things below that level, or move things below that level. Over the years, we've seen consistently that the major cause of spinal cord injury is in a motor vehicle accident, and that also includes motorcycles or three-wheelers. But by far, those are the most common ways that people get a spinal cord injury. You also can see the second most common cause being falls. And now we're seeing a little bit more population having falls as their cause of spinal cord injury because it occurs in an older population. So now that the population has aged some with the baby boomers coming through and being one of the largest groups, they're getting to age where they fall and they have neck injuries. So we're seeing more falls than ever before, but still automobile accidents are the most frequent. Other types of injuries that we see are injuries that have occurred from an act of violence. And that can be like a blow with some type of object, or gunshot wounds. Those are very common. And the other most common of the type of etiologies or causes would be sports injuries. And we still, despite all that we are doing to help prevent sports injury-related spinal cord injuries, we still do see a small portion of people from sports having spinal cord injuries.
So, Dr. McLean, what is level of injury, and what's the difference between a complete and incomplete injury? Why is this important to know the difference?
Well, in order to assess what has been damaged from a spinal cord injury, we have a systematic way of examining individuals. And we use a classification system, which is called the International Standards for Neurological Classification of Spinal Cord Injury. And this has been developed and refined through the years internationally so that everybody knows what they're talking about when they give a diagnosis from this classification. And this classification is based on the areas in the spinal cord that are still working versus those that are not working. And we test them through, we test sensation, and we test how well they can move muscles. And if there is a level where there is normal sensation and ability to move muscles above it, but then there is a place that becomes where you don't see anything or any movement below, which is a paralysis, then that becomes the level that we designate for that spinal cord injury. One of the other things that we want to know is whether or not the injury is complete versus incomplete. And this tells us whether there may be a level that we note that has totally normal sensory and motor activity above, but below that level, there may still be some preservation of something. And it would have the most important thing is that you have to have sensation around your sacral area to be an incomplete. But you could also have some movement that, even though it's not normal. We find this very important because it helps us predict how severe that injury to the spinal cord was. If it was very, very complete, then the spinal cord is so damaged that it's not going to come back. It's not after the swelling goes down. There's the majority of the time there's no change, and there are some exceptions to this. But if you examine this area right after the injury, and there is something that's left over below this totally normal level, then that means that prognosis is very good, that as the swelling goes down in the spinal cord and as time goes on, some of the nerves will come back and some of the repair processes of the body will come into play to where there's a good chance that more movement and sensation will return after the injury.
So what are some current issues in medical management if you determine that someone has paraplegia or tetraplegia? Explain a little bit about these and then assess for us the appropriateness of specific treatments that you might use once you detect what's going on.
Okay, the terms paraplegia and tetraplegia, and tetraplegia used to be called, we used to use the word quadriplegia, so you still see both those terms. But paraplegia means that there is damage in the spinal cord where you still have the ability to use your hands and your arms. And you have sensation and it's normal and you have a level of injury that's lower than the neck. And the term tetraplegia means that you have some involvement in the arms that are paralyzed or have lost function. So that's why we have two separate terms. One that involves, it means more damage higher up, and you can't use your arms as well. And then paraplegia means that you probably can use your arms, and it's very different for what types of things that you may need in way of equipment. As far as medical management, there are many issues. There are the issues that are important right after an acute injury, that is, you know, roadside protection and getting people to ICU and an emergency evacuation and to areas that have spinal cord injury specialists to evaluate whether you need surgery or not, or just to manage your care. There are also issues that after you're stable and they've decided whether or not you need surgery, and you, if you've had surgery, you're stable from that, that you go into a rehabilitation management. And there are treatments that one side is more on the acute side to really preserve as much as possible and to the surgery is to really not help with the spinal cord injury per se, but it's to keep everything around the spinal cord, the bones that have been broken around the spinal cord, to keep them from moving or re-damaging the spinal cord. So when you get into rehabilitation, which is a lot what I do, we start looking at all the secondary complications that occur in an acute paralysis or spinal cord injury.
So speak about some of those secondary complications, whether they involve, you know, the gastrointestinal system or feeding, or just give us a little overview of what you're looking at.
Well, there's several major things that we look at, and when you have the spinal cord injury and you have a paralysis, there is also the communication from the organs, many organ systems that communicate to the brain, that is also disrupted. So you end up with, depending upon where your level of injury is, you usually end up with some dysfunction of either the, as you mentioned, the gastrointestinal system, which is the way your bowels work and the predictability. So you're not aware as much of that in your brain, and you actually can become incontinent, to where you don't know when you will have a bowel movement or when that will happen. So we work with retraining the bowels and putting people on programs so that they can have the predictability, maybe not the awareness, but at least have a predictability of managing that. The same thing is with the bladder or your urological system. Your kidneys will still work, and but your bladder is not able to send any type of signal to the brain, and the brain is not able to control the bladder. And sometimes the bladder can start working on its own, and you don't have any control of it, and you don't know when it's working. Or sometimes the bladder won't work at all. And either case, you have to have a way of emptying the bladder so you don't have urinary tract infections and later on problems with your kidneys. So we manage that, and we work with an individual on finding a way to do that according to their lifestyle. Another major issue that we look at is skin breakdown. People who don't have sensation are more likely to get pressure sores, which can really delay any type of improvement and can become affected. So we teach it. We monitor that, and we teach about that. If there's a high level of spinal cord injury, we always are worried about respiratory system. Sometimes people, if their injury level is high enough, they have to go on a ventilator right after their injury, and most of the time they are able to be weaned from the ventilator, but they always have an impaired ability to breathe. And so we work with that system to maximize breathing at whichever stage we can. We try to eventually get if there's a tube in the neck, we try to get that removed so that people can breathe on their own and keep their breathing healthy. So the major issues are, you know, the different subsystems, and as well as preventing infections, which are very common and can really set people back. And then, of course, getting people back psychologically into understanding about their injury and being able to say, I have this spinal cord injury that has had a great effect on my life, but I can go on with my life and I can still do things that are participating in life and give me a quality of life.
So in summary, doctor, tell other physicians what you'd like them to know about spinal cord injury and when to refer to a specialist.
Well, I think all individuals with a spinal cord injury should be followed by a specialist in physical medicine and rehabilitation, more as a coordinator of making sure that the preventive things are done and that the things that need to be looked at are performed in the test. But on the other hand, I feel like all people with spinal cord injury should have a primary care doctor and the specialist that they may need at the time. The issue that I see that's more of a trend and that I've seen studies on is that physicians tend to be a little ill at ease with managing people with spinal cord injury, I think more from a fact that they do not believe that they know the comprehensive way of managing them or that something with their spinal cord injury may impact what they normally do. When that happens sometimes, and that's not everybody, not all physicians, it's just a general sense of discomfort that I feel happens. But when that happens, people do not get the complete care that they need from a primary care physician. They need every single thing that anybody needs, any able-bodied individual. They need all the preventive health care. They need their blood work. They need all the things that we would get at an age-appropriate time. And that just because they're in a wheelchair, they doesn't mean that they are not humans first and need these things. Accessibility is another issue that they need to make sure that anybody feels that they're place of practice is accessible for them. And not only is it the law, but also it ensures that an individual feels comfortable and is able to be examined correctly. And sometimes physicians don't even get people with spinal cord injuries out of their wheelchairs when they come into the office for an annual examination. So those types of things are very important, I think, for the general population. And there are also resources online or at other model systems. There's 14 model systems across the country that has a wealth of information for not only people with spinal cord injury, but also physicians and practitioners that are at a good clinical level.
And tell us about your team. Why is UAB so great to work with?
Well, we do have a great team. We have the longest held model system, which is from the National Institute of Disability and Independent Living for Rehabilitation and Research. And we've had our we apply for this every 5 years, and we collect data on people that have had spinal cord injuries and the cause and complications. We've been doing this since the early 70s, and we work with an international cohort to look at trends and ways that we can do things better. Here at UAB, the system is such that we have great care in the field to bring people. We're a level one trauma unit. We have amazing intensivists and trauma surgeons. Great neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons that do nothing but spinal cord surgery and understand so much about the spinal cord and how to do maximize return. And then our spinal cord injury rehabilitation unit has been here since the early 60s. And we have a long history of understanding secondary complications, and if things aren't done here, we are constantly in contact with the newest research trials across the country, or even the world, and then some of the things that people shouldn't be doing in research that's not really sanctioned by science. So our team. When you get to rehabilitation, it consists of specific spinal cord injury nursing, specific physical and occupational therapists that just do spinal cord injury. We have psychological support, social service support, and many other types of health professions that work together on a team to maximize the function and the quality of life of individuals with spinal cord injury.
Thank you so much, Dr. McLean, for being with us today. And a community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.